This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, SeavillePodcast.com.
Jason Whitehead joins us in studio. He's a reporter for the Seaville Weekly. Speaking of growth and development, that certainly is your bailiwick, and you do a fantastic job of keeping track of some of these big, important issues. Now, you did a recent story. It wasn't a big story, but it is getting a lot of talk out there. A lot of has sparked a big discussion in the community, and specifically something about Albemarle Place and the sewers at Albemarle Place. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell us what you uncovered, pun intended.
Well, it's basically the development that's known as Albemarle Place, which is right where Hydraulic and 29 intercept, and it surrounds the Sperry Marine Naval Complex.
Where the old Blockbuster used to be. There's a 7-Eleven there.
And there's still a 7-Eleven there.
Not
that's
for long.
Refusing to sell.
Yeah. And that'll go all the way back and around Sperry Marine.
Yeah, a big, huge Whole Foods is going back there, and...
Yeah,
I think a movie theater. So.
Yep, and apartments and office, and it's going to be twice the size of the downtown mall.
Right.
And it's going to be, from what I've heard, it's going to be one of those sort of faux downtown malls. You'll go and park, and then you'll sort of walk along what might look like an old Main Street.
Right. There's actually a few of those developments around town where they envision them as being these very insular communities where they actually plan them as opposed to like some place like Georgetown that just naturally grew up and has a main street. They are already planning out the main street, and they have names, and they're planning like apartments will be on the second level and businesses will be on the first level, and there will be a main street, and they have a name for it,
yeah,
and all those
yeah.
sort of things.
They recently unveiled one in Williamsburg. For you folks that have been down there, you know what I'm talking about. With investment from the College of William and Mary, interestingly enough, to try to provide more places for students to go. There's also, I've been to one outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, that is very high-end, very upscale, and I have to say, it's gorgeous, but it feels like Disney. I mean, it really feels like you're in Walt Disney World,
right.
It looks like it.
Yeah. I mean, I know I've read about that Disney community. The interesting thing with all those developments is the reality that, like with that Disney community down in Florida, that they plan it one day, one way, and it usually ends up like the citizens take control of it and it ends up as something else. So it's not all about the planning. But.
So Albemarle Place, of course, a lot of factors have to be overcome. A lot of challenges have to be overcome mm-hmm. before they can build this thing, not the least of which is the traffic situation.
Right.
But now we find out that the sewers are a problem, which nobody had any idea.
Yeah, the planners or the developers behind Albemarle Place got a real rude awakening in December when they met with the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority in December again, where they learned that the sewer capacity is already pretty much tapped out, and so it can't handle flushing of toilets or whatever would happen at Albemarle Place. So, and I believe it's 700 residential units and
that's a lot of
myriad
toilets.
Of stores and so forth. So they were basically told that the infrastructure isn't ready for their development.
And it's already been, the development's been pretty much approved.
Well, it's been, because, yeah, I talked with Frank Cox, who's been involved in the development of it, and it's been years in the developing, and he even kind of accepted some of the blame for it in the sense of that it's been going on for a real long time trying to get this approved and meeting everybody's standards, but they thought they had it all set up and then found out just a few months ago that it's, I mean, if they built this, they would have a bunch of toilets that didn't flush. So,
and of course, the big concern at this point among some in the community is that taxpayers are going to be asked to upgrade this sewer so that the developer can come in and create Albemarle Place.
Yeah, well, one of the elements of this whole situation with Albemarle Place, and it probably exists with other developments that are going around the city, is it still seems to be pretty hazy. I know that a lot of citizens are concerned that they're going to have to foot the bill, but I think it's pretty much in some kind of some sort of legal limbo exactly right now as to how much like a developer has to pay. Like, does he just have to pay for his lines that go to this interceptor, which is like the main hub where all of it comes through? Or does he also have to pay, like with Meadow Creek, which Albemarle Place is going to feed into, they're going to have to build most likely a new interceptor. And it's pretty much because of this new development, does he have to contribute
to upgrade,
or do the developers
yeah.
have to cash in for this as well?
To upgrade that infrastructure.
It seems like it's sort of still in this kind of, I don't know, murky territory. So
yeah, where there's some lawyers talking somewhere
probably,
in some room.
Most likely.
We're talking with Jason Whitehead, a reporter with the Seaville Weekly, and the phone lines are open if you'd like to join this conversation at 977-1070. Tom is on line one. Tom, you're on with Jason Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. Quick question. From what I hear from you, this went before the Planning Commission, multiple work sessions, the Board of Supervisors, got approved, and no one thought to ask if there was adequate sewage facilities for a development this size. I mean, that's hard to believe, and if the taxpayer gets stuck with the bill from this, it seems to me that some heads should roll.
Yeah, I've talked to some folks out there, Tom, who agree with you. There are some folks, and I will say, who are pretty upset about this, and they wonder, why are we just now finding out about this after the developer has been, you know, jumped through all these hoops and is dangling this big project in front of the county? Why are we just now finding out that the sewers can't even handle the development?
Right. I mean, this should have been in the planning process. You should have thought there would have been a little checkbox somewhere that said, can you flush? You know, that someone would have checked off. I mean, if you take this and the debacle out here in Crozet with the master plan, it's really starting to point that there's a systemic problem in planning in Albemarle County. And again, if the residents get stuck with the dollar bill for this thing, something has to be done and something has to change.
Tom, thanks so much
for the
call. Jason, your thoughts on this? It has been a long planning process, but evidently the topic of sewers wasn't really high on the agenda.
Yeah, my impression really was because with the Meadow Creek Interceptor, which is the one in focus here with Albemarle Place, is that it was built in the mid-50s. And everything that everybody loves about Charlottesville, like the quaint aspects, and that it still has like this very small town feel. I don't know definitively, but I got the impression that this has just been something. Nobody ever really had the foresight that, oh, yeah, they're just going to max out this area. And so, like, developers like Albemarle Place, they just assumed everything was kind of being looked into. And then, yeah, I mean, it's not only, like, just your regular citizen that's being surprised by this. It's also developers, it's everybody.
Yeah, so. and understandable. I would think that the citizens who there's a chance that we might get stuck with the bill have a right to be upset, and I think that developers have a big right to be upset because they have
right.
put money on the line here in planning this project, lots of money on the line, and they have every right to be upset that that the sewers won't even handle their development. John is on the line. John, thanks for the call. You're on with Jason. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I just think, once again, as the prior gentleman said, at some point we ought to just draw a line in the sand and stop this development in this area. It's just unfortunate. It's being basically Northern Virginia that, you know, is encroaching on us. We're getting folks from out of the area moving in left and right. The reservoir, some people that live here now don't remember what we had with the drought. Several years ago, we haven't resolved that. Driving throughout the, you know, the area, Albemarle County City is becoming more chaotic. There's no mass transportation. I think the officials that are running things and deciding things, unfortunately, one of them leaving the city, Kevin Lynch, has been on top of some of this stuff, but people just don't see all the things that are being approved, but they are not having any foresight, and this is just another example of it.
John, thanks so much for the call. Jason, your thoughts on this, and give us an idea of what some of the folks that you've talked to have been saying about it.
Well, one fact about this is that In 2004, they hired a new executive director at the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority. And I did get the sense from talking to him that he's really on top of it, but maybe he was one of those type of individuals that like assumed a position and didn't really know kind of the dilemma that he was facing. And from talking to him, I did get the sense, because they are in this process right now of analyzing everything that's going on in terms of the pipes. And I've seen a memo that Tom Frederick, the executive director of the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority, sent out last week, where it just really got into, you know, there's 43 miles of buried pipeline. There's 408 miles of sewer collections. And it might not something might not have been something that was planned in the past for whatever reason, but it does seem like something that they're trying to address right now. Is it too little, too late? And the other thing to keep in mind is there's almost kind of like this natural sense of perhaps our infrastructure is actually putting a check on how we can develop, in the sense of, like, all of a sudden these developments are going, whoa, Charlottesville can't handle this. And there's a sense of, yeah, there was this, like, I haven't talked to the past executive directors of the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority, but you kind of get the sense of this wasn't something that was necessarily that they stayed on top of, that now they're addressing. But in a way, I mean, it's the dilemma that faces everybody that lives in Charlottesville, that especially it drives up North 29, but these other developments that are coming, Biscuit Run and that sort of thing, of, you know, is Charlottesville ready to handle all of this? And there's a sense in which you can look at this, like this dilemma with this infrastructure, and say, oh, Charlottesville doesn't have their stuff together, that sort of sense. But there's almost, there's another sense of, you know, is this infrastructure saying, hey, we're not ready to handle all this development?
Yeah. Jason Whitehead is a reporter with the Seaville Weekly, and we're talking about growth and development here in the area and the fact that the sewers aren't ready for some of this development. And what's the price tag? Do we have a price tag yet on fixing these sewers for Albemarle Place? And that's really what it would be. We'd be fixing the sewers so that this development can take place, so that Albemarle Place can be built. You know, roads aside, the roads are another issue. And right now, that may be a bigger issue than the sewers. But what's the price tag? Does anybody put a number on it on what needs to happen so that Albemarle Place could be built?
I haven't heard a figure yet, and it is, I know that the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority is in the process right now of just, when the new executive director came in, I think he almost initially said, hey, we need to analyze everything. I think he realized kind of the dire state of everything, and, that's going to take still a while. I don't think any figures have been thrown out there yet. It's not going to be cheap.
No, I was going to say, it's probably a safe bet that we're talking about tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Ouch. That's a lot of money. And what do you think, based on the people you've talked to so far, what would you say on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the developer and 5 being the taxpayer, who's going to be responsible for upgrading those sewers so that Albemarle Place can move forward?
Well, the interesting thing about this really is it does set up this incredible dilemma, which even like the fact that we're talking about this right now is that, sure, taxpayers don't want to have to pay for people that are going to come into this area and these new developments that perhaps they don't even want anyway. But I think there's an aspect of this that may send a really strong signal to all developers out there that they may have to foot some of the bill.
Let's continue our discussion with Jason Whitehead of the Seaville Weekly. We're talking infrastructure from a different angle. We were talking during the break about how the Virginia way has traditionally been that the developer has sort of steered the cart with minimal input from local government. The developer has sort of said, I want to do this over here. And the local government has said, sure, that sounds good, whether you have infrastructure or not. And it's sort of been known in Virginia, if you build it, the infrastructure will follow. Go ahead and build it, build that neighborhood, and then the local taxpayers will foot the bill for the road that goes out to the neighborhood, or the widening of the road, or the upgrading of the sewers. And it's really, I think a lot of people in Central Virginia now are recognizing, and across Virginia are recognizing, that we really can't do things that way anymore. It is incredibly frustrating, and we see it every day when we get in our cars and drive up and down 29, or you drive anywhere around Virginia. It really is frustrating here to see it. In many ways, it's sort of like a ticking time bomb, this development, that we really do not have adequate infrastructure in place for what's happening development-wise.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you drive up 29, it's obvious that that exists with the roads, but I also get that sense from just attending Planning Commission and Board of Supervisor meetings as well, that your, especially your most recent members of these boards, I think have the same sense that they've kind of stepped into something. I think for a number of years, there was this idea of just Charlottesville as this idyllic small town. And now that it's faced with all this development, it's not that nobody knows what to do, but I think it's a little overwhelming for everybody.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you that. Is it a matter of incompetence upon a part of the local planners? Because I would think not. I think we have some really talented people working in the city and the county. So where's the disconnect? If we have really talented people with advanced degrees in planning, folks who understand planning principles and really know this market, what's happening? Why are we just now finding out that the sewers aren't good enough?
Right. Well, I haven't covered the county and the city long enough to know past commissions and past boards. But again, I do kind of get the sense that the people that are there now have stepped into a situation where, in a sense, they're just like literally like, whoa, what have I stepped into? And they're trying to grapple with like, oh, wait, somebody wants to build, like in the case of Biscuit Run, 3,100 residential homes in the south of the city. But wait a second. We have these really small roads, Avon and Fifth Street don't even connect. And, the sewers, they were built to accommodate much smaller city. And so it's, if you can just imagine yourself in their place, like they're literally sitting there going, I mean, what are we supposed to do? Like, do we just deny these developments? What do they do? And so it is that adage of the horse before the cart. And I think it gets turned over so many times that it gets very confusing.
Jason Whitehead with the Siebel Weekly, and the phone lines are open. If you have an opinion about this issue, it's 977-1070. Always enjoy hearing from you as well. Jason, what are you working on right now? I know you were working on something that I think comes out next week about the Ravanna River. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. I'm basically writing about why the Ravanna is dirty, which in 1996, it was listed as impaired for E. coli and fecal coliform, which isn't good, obviously. And because there's... Because of all these politics, even on the federal level in terms of the EPA and all of these things, there's a 12-year backlog of in terms of when they're going to restore these rivers. And so the Ravanna has just gotten under the Department of Environmental Quality is doing a report on it right now. But it's through 300... I guess it's about 300 years of development. We've just really overwhelmed the Ravanna watershed, which is this incredible system of streams that starts in the Blue Ridge and it all trickles down. And there's anybody that's driven around, or especially if you've ever gone on the Ravanna Trail, there's just these myriad of streams they're feeding into. Well, each time there's a new development, it disrupts these streams and, there's all kinds of things that all feed into this dilemma of the Ravanna being this sick waterway. So, and it's a little distressing in the sense of it was Virginia's first scenic river to be classified, and Thomas Jefferson's first overt political act was opening up the Ravanna as a navigable waterway.
Yeah,
exactly. And And that was so he could ship like flour and stuff down the river and make money.
Yeah, but, he had a little mill there at Shadwell.
But it's this very, and just in my own past experiences, I've found, you know, even I lived here for a long time and I'd never been down to the Ravanna at all. And it seems to be kind of like this forgotten waterway that's limping or it's sick. If you go out to the Ravanna, if you stand up on the banks, you actually, in most places, look down about 10 or 15 feet because it's really shallow now because of erosion and development. It's carved out these big waterways and it's just, it's not well, it's not healthy. So, but the reaffirming thing about doing this story was that there is a lot of involvement in the sense of trying to restore it. So
and flesh that out for us. What actually is happening? Because I knew it was dirty. You can look at it and see it's
right,
dirty,
right.
But
it's brown.
Evidently, yeah. It is. If your research is accurate, it's a lot sicker than anybody had previously thought.
Well, there part of the problem is, like I mentioned, this federal level of there were, like, the Clean Water Act was passed in the early 70s, and it wasn't really enforced until like 25 years later. I think Clinton signed in some legislation, and then it's actually been revoked in more recent times in some aspects. But it's just, even what Thomas Jefferson did harmed it in some ways. Like, that he, you know, he blasted in some areas to make it more deeper so his boats could go down and ship commerce. And if you just think about any time you see a development, we live in this area that's just rich with streams and creeks. You see them everywhere. Well, if you're building and there's a stream going through your development, you close it off and you redirect it. And that's been happening for like three centuries now. And what it means is, like, all of this mud's been flowing in the river, all of this overcapacity. There's one, you know, part of the stream that flows right under downtown and flows right into Moore's Creek. And I mean, just think about all the water that would flow from downtown, and it's just going in your average stream, and that flows in this river that just flows, I mean, right to the right of the city. And so,
yeah. and how do you clean it up? I mean, literally, it strikes me, and I'm ignorant of the specifics of it and of the science of it, but it just strikes me as an average Joe that you can't clean it up, that you can maybe make it a little better, but, you know, it's going to be what it is because so many people want to live here.
Right. Well, there actually are a lot of preventative ways, and there are a lot of groups like the Nature Conservancy and Stream Watch and the Ravanna Conservation Society and a lot of government agencies as well. They're doing a lot of stuff. Like, I went out one day with Ridge Schuyler from the Nature Conservancy and saw where they had put a lot of money into restoring a stream bed where a farmer had come in and redirected the stream so it would irrigate his crops. But what it meant actually is he just dug this big ditch that just literally just created this slew of mud that just fed in the Ravanna all the time. So they closed that off and redirected the stream. The problem with that is it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars to do that.
Yeah.
The good thing is, and this is, it's up to citizens as well, is to prevent developments from creating too much stormwater or like, I live on Fifth Street. It's a growth area, so there's all these developments all the time. When they come into an area, they clear out every tree. That's not, I mean, that's just, and obviously not good for the land because it creates a lot of mud and everything. And when you go down and look at the Ravanna and you go, oh, it's, especially if there's been rain,
it's gross.
I mean, it's just brown.
It's gross. Come on, admit it.
And that's largely sediment flowing into the river, but there's a lot of contributing factors, like when you put fertilizer on your lawn and it rains, it flows right down the curb into a storm drain and goes through a pipe right into the river.
Right.
So,
well, that's why they like planting trees next to the waterways, because it acts like
a buffer. Yeah.
And helps, it helps the stuff from actually reaching the river. Jason Whitehead writes for the Seaville Weekly and joins us occasionally to talk about some of his work. Very, very quickly, I know you have an article coming out this week regarding the nominating convention in the city for city council, which is coming up soon. What is that?
It's the first Saturday of June.
So just a few weeks here.
Right.
And we sort of, with all the Democrats in Charlottesville, they tend to, we tend to see the folks who win the nominating convention at the Democratic convention tend to win the seats in city council because Charlottesville is tilted so heavily Democratic.
Right.
But what's so interesting is you found out something interesting about these Democratic nominating conventions. They're not all that Democratic, small d, Democratic.
Well, yeah, they're actually much more Democratic than they used to be, and that's because just in the last, I believe it's three elections, like they've opened it up where when somebody comes to the nominating convention and they vote for somebody, you're actually voting for the actual person. You used to vote, and then they calculated delegates off of that, and then the delegates went and voted for the city council people. I guess the sort of distressing part about it, although I guess it's a large turnout compared to the past, is just that so few people turn out for it. Like they've had, I believe in 2006, even there were only two people up for seats. Only like 300 something people came out, and it,
300.
I was even surprised to learn myself. I mean, it's open to everybody. All you have to do is you come in and they have a piece of paper you sign that says that you're not going to oppose the Democrats in the election. That's all you have to do is sign that. If you're a registered voter, I mean, because you don't register as Democrat or Republican anyway in terms of the
city. Is that even legal that you sign that? I guess if it's a party event, maybe that is legal. But
yeah, and I mean, there's no way to follow up on that anyway. Yeah. But, you know, like Democratic Party officials were pretty pleased that they had like 600 people show up.
That's amazing.
Really,
in a
turnout
city the size of Charlottesville.
Right.
Just a few hundred folks.
Well, 8,000 people like voted for Kerry or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but when you really think about it, that city council makes just enormous decisions that impacts everybody who lives in Charlottesville, and it's actually
and a lot
really
of people in the other counties around it too.
It's much more important than voting for Kerry or Bush or McCain or Hillary or whoever, because these people literally go, this is how much money the schools are going to get, or this is what we're going to do with the new parkway or the interceptor or whatever. Like, these people are making enormous decisions, so you should show up and vote for it.
Amazing that just a few hundred folks turn out to pick those candidates, which usually end up being the ones who make it on council.
Right.
You would think more people would be there.
Right. But it is, it's all, I mean, it kind of is similar in the sense of the Rivanna River, even really, is it's almost like this invisible entity that exists. I wasn't that aware of it even really myself, you know, like you could just show up and pick your, I mean, you're literally pretty much picking the people who are going to be on the city council.
Yeah.
So you have a real say in what's going on. So
Jason Whitehead writes for the Seaville Weekly. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SeavillePodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.